Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I was watching it and feeling quite engaged with it still, and still feeling quite like tense whilst watching them do maths, which is not the most engaging thing. And I think a lot of that is due to the way it's very fast paced in the editing, but also the score is just like phenomenal in terms of like his guys adding up some numbers, and then the music's gonna make sure that you know that it's important that they get these numbers right.
I'm probably not the best person for this podcast episode because I don't like films set in space.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening today. Joining us, we have Ran.
Hello.
Meg.
Hiya.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about Apollo 13. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher. Joining us today, we have Fran and Meg. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hiya, I'm Meg. I'm a freelance producer, disability rights campaigner and a journalist that mainly writes about disability issues. That's basically all the things I do.
And a podcast producer as well?
Kind of. I've done podcasty things, been on a few. Basically, I do a lot of things not very well.
Fair enough. Well, what do you mean not very well?
You put yourself down.
I think we're going to disagree with that.
Master of all trades.
Well, that's it. And Fran, who are you?
So I am Francesca Tarauskas, or Fran. And similar to Meg, I do lots of different things. I'll let other people judge how good I am at them. But I work on a number of different podcasts. They mostly fit into the like outside and wilderness category. And the main one I'm working on at the moment is my new project, On the Outside podcast, which is diverse views on outdoors news. So it's a panel show, and we're talking about all kinds of outdoor sports and adventure sports and what's happening in kind of that realm, essentially. Really exciting. And I also write for Pod Bible magazine. So anybody that's interested in podcast recommendations, I do the digital editing for Pod Bible, and we've always got lists and recommendations of different genres over there. So head on over.
Yeah, head over to Pod Bible magazine and get Fran's recommendations and interviews with other pod people.
Including Kobe.
Was I interviewed?
At some point, yes. Going back a while.
We were interviewed for our birthday, didn't we? We got interviewed for the 200th episode.
Featured, yay! Such a highlight to be featured. So thank you.
We are talking today, guys, about Apollo 13, which is your choice, Fran. Fran, can you tell us first of all why you chose the film, and I'll get the timer ready for the synopsis of 1 minute or less.
Yeah. So I was quite young when Apollo 13 the film came
when
out.
So
I thought about that halfway through. When the Apollo 13 film came out, I would have been about six. So it's one of those films that I've kind of grown up with and is always on telly every now and then. And I think that I just wanted to really look at it again and sit down and watch it properly, as opposed to it being in the background or all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a good excuse to do that. And for,
do you want a synopsis?
Yeah, let's do the synopsis. This is either going to be really short or really, really long. So Apollo 13 was a disaster in 1970. NASA sent a spaceship up. It was named Apollo 13. Everybody thought that that was bad luck, and it did turn out to be bad luck because the spaceship had a small explosion of some sort, and the ship was aiming for the moon. They couldn't get to the moon in the end, and what this turned into was a massive rescue mission. NASA trying to figure out how to get this spaceship back to Earth safely without any difficulties.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I feel like I should have probably said something about who stars in it and that kind of thing.
We'll get to that. It doesn't matter. The synopsis is just to set the scene. We'll talk about some guy called Hanks at some point, I'm sure. Meg, Apollo 13, had you seen this before? What are your thoughts?
I'm probably not the best person for this podcast episode because I don't like films set in space. Like, I hadn't seen Star Wars up until over Christmas. I hadn't seen any of them since I was a kid, and I couldn't really remember them. Now I've seen most of them, and I kind of like them, but I'm not a big fan of it. A film set in space. I'm really sorry, guys.
I want to know more about what it is that you... I'm fascinated. This is
a new subgenre. We found people who don't like animation, full stop. We know people who don't like musicals.
See, that's weird. I think that's a wider genre. There's a setting of space. Isn't it? Yeah, probably.
I don't know. Is there a difference between... I mean, it sounds like there isn't, but is a fantasy set in space versus, like, real life space?
The thing that I would say similar about Star Wars and about Apollo 13 that I don't like is space jargon.
Right.
Like when there's people pressing buttons and saying things that I don't understand because I'm not an astronaut or a pilot, a space pilot, whatever they call it in Star Wars.
Jedi,
that's the one. Because I don't know those things. And for me, hearing a lot of it, it's like white noise to me, basically. When they're all pressing the buttons and doing their little tasks, it's just white noise to me.
Does that extend to other kind of film types, like
underwater?
I'm trying to think, like, sorry?
Any submarine films?
No, they're fine.
Okay.
Well, what else to say?
Sorry.
What about the acting? What about Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton?
Tom Hanks is great. I love Tom Hanks. He's
as long as he's not in space.
I don't like space jargon. Maybe I like films set in space. I just don't like the majority of them. Like, I've seen The Martian, seen Gravity, seen Moon.
Yeah. And you didn't like any of them?
Not really, because there's lots of space jargon.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you went to watch... I was going to say, if you went to watch an action film and they fight all the time, but that's literally what an action film is, and I don't like action films. So, yeah.
Helen, are you adverse to space?
I love films set in space, like even like some bad ones. Like, I really like it. I think it's partly because it terrifies me, like the thought of getting into a spaceship and being... blasted off into a complete unknown and potentially going to die, and die in a way where basically your body sort of like turns itself inside out and you explode. So
is that what happens, or is it just burnout or freeze? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's not a good way to go. I think it might be quick though. I think because like if you're spinning round and round, then you'll like pass out and then the body explosion and weird stuff will happen. I remember this coming out. I don't think I saw it at the cinema, but I remember seeing the posters and I remember kind of seeing it in
all the TV spots and Houston, We Got a Problem, like every single,
And on like the cover of Empire and everything. And I think it was the highest grossing film of 1995 as well. So it was massive. It was huge. But I would have seen it maybe a little bit later than that. And I don't know how many times I've seen it. This may maybe only the second or third. I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but kind of Apollo 13 is just kind of like ingrained in my memory a lot more than maybe the times I've seen the film. But I think it's a really, really solid like space movie. I think when it came out, like how how it came out, how they managed to recreate kind of like being in space on film was quite groundbreaking. And it, you know, people who'd been into space have said, you know, it is like this, like they really kind of, you know, made it look like it was in space. And it's one of those kind of real human interest stories. And, you know, you kind of, you really want these people not to die. Spoiler, no one dies. It's a space film and no one dies. Like, it's really rare that this happens. And yeah, I kind of like it. I'm kind of interested in NASA because if you dig into their history, like a lot of stuff goes wrong at NASA. I'm surprised like more missions haven't ended in disaster because NASA is not a safe place to be working.
Yeah, Fran, what are your thoughts? You are a space movie fan in general, and what are your thoughts on Apollo 13? Oh, I mean,
yeah, quite a space movie fan, and I'm quite a space fan in general. Like Helen, I've dug in a bit to NASA history and how NASA worked. And last year was the anniversary of the Apollo 13 flight. So there was loads of stuff around last year. And there was the 13 Minutes to the Moon, the BBC podcast that went in a kind of like blow by blow of what happened during Apollo 13. It was really interesting having kind of grown up with this and knowing Apollo 13 and having that kind of massive historical aspect that you know the story and you know the film, but then to come back in it and watch it as an adult, having known some of the actual history and some of the stuff that went on behind, was super interesting. And I don't think it really lost anything from knowing bits that maybe weren't quite accurate or, you know, that kind of thing. It still felt like a really good film and a really kind of well told story, considering how complicated that story
could
have
been. What's that podcast called again, sorry?
13 Minutes to the Moon. Really good podcast.
Does that make sense title wise? I mean, I'll check it out, but
yeah, so
like
it was 13 because
seconds
the,
to Mars.
Yeah, it's because the first series they did the moon landings.
Right.
And so it was like 13 minutes was the descent between kind of when they left and when they landed on the moon.
Okay.
So that's where
so
the name came from.
It's not linked
from.
To Apollo 13 or
And then, yeah, the second one was the Apollo 13 one. So, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a few based on true story films on here. And the question I always like to ask when it comes to this is how important is accuracy of the story when it's portrayed? In film. And then I know this one, I think this one, they would have had to do it very accurately or as close to it without falsifying things. But does it tend to matter to yourself, or are you happy to take a kernel of truth and let the story flow like with something like Cool Runnings?
I'm really 50-50 on it because I think that there's with something like this, like you say, I think they kind of had to be accurate because the people that were involved in it, a lot of them were still alive, and they got them involved in the actual making as much as they could and that kind of thing. But then like Cool Runnings, like you say, Cool Runnings wasn't really accurate, but it's a great film and it got people interested in the in the topic and that kind of thing. So I think if it's done well and it gets people interested in a topic, then it's done its job, even if it's not necessarily completely accurate.
Meg?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it is accurate. I just found it a bit boring. Sorry.
Space jargon.
Yeah, like you have to admit, a large part of that film is them just being in space and something's gone wrong and they're just speaking space jargon at each other for 10 minutes.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No, say it. Disagree with me.
No, I'm going to agree with you.
Oh, great.
I do think it is a lot of that. And I think one of the things that watching it through this time and really thinking about it, there are scenes where they're literally just doing maths.
Mm.
And you're still watching it. Well, I was watching it and feeling quite engaged with it still, and still feeling quite like tense whilst watching them do maths, which is not the most engaging thing. And I think a lot of that is due to the, obviously, the way it's very fast paced in the editing, but also the score is just like phenomenal in terms of like his guys adding up some numbers, and then the music's going to make sure that you know that it's important that they get these numbers right, and that kind of thing. So,
but we've seen that in things like it's the one about the four black women
Hidden Figures.
Hidden Figures. There we go. That's got a lot of maths going on there. Now every time there's chalk and blackboard, I'm like, yeah, do it.
Do that maths.
I have no idea what you're drawing.
I find the maths in films, like especially this kind of maths and physics maths, because I'm like terrible at it. I don't really understand it. I'm like, whoa, I don't really know what's going on, but like they're doing it really well, and like, oh, might that happen? Because I generally have no idea whether the maths is going to be correct or not. So I'm like, oh, is it good maths or bad maths? I don't know.
I think it's the same for me with like maths. It could be chess. It could be like baseball. I have literally no idea what's going on. And I'm like, but if they portray it in a way, and I think as Fran was saying, maybe the music was like extra dramatic, or they zoomed in on the formula as they were writing it. And then the big thumbs up, yes, it's correct. they obviously, Ron Howard, they know how to do these things. I really enjoyed this film. I think I've maybe seen it a couple of times. And I think like Helen, I remember it coming out and being the biggest thing ever, but also at the moment I can remember thinking, well, I know what happens, so where's the tension? And I think that's also my problem again still, is like, I know they make it back alive, so is ultimately there any tension? Maybe I'm just a bit sadistic. Maybe I just really want to be the person that had no idea what happened. And I think that's probably the best way to go into this.
Yeah, I mean, so that's me. I had no idea what happened.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
What was that like then?
I kind of guess that they weren't all going to die because it wasn't a high rated movie. And I didn't think realistically they were all going to die, because that's not a really good Hollywood story, is it? So it lost a lot of the danger factor for me because of that. But yeah, I had no idea what happened in Apollo 13.
That is absolutely amazing. Fran, did you know?
Yeah, I think I probably knew... I probably knew from the movie, so it probably like was growing up with that taught me about it. So yeah,
I wonder maybe if the news at the time, Helen just told us what happened, and we were kind of like, well,
I distinctly remember the first time watching it being kind of like very much more like, will they make it? I mean, there wasn't Google back then, and like I don't think we really got kind of like NASA in space as much as America did. It never really. You know, it was never really like on TV, because there's obviously a bit where they go up into space and they're recording if they're like live on TV, and they're like, oh, well, no one's watching it. They've switched off. But there was a period in America where you could like switch TV on, so we'd be like in space doing like space stuff, like
really
drinking and peeing. Yeah, it was just like, it was a massive thing. And
drinking and peeing at the same time.
Yeah.
And now I would watch that.
And by like 1970, when this launch was like, the people had really kind of like turned off from space. They'd gone from like the peak kind of like moon landing space, and they just kind of like lost their interest. So this kind of like peaked it back up in the fact that it was like nearly a disaster, but wasn't. So it's like NASA and like public interest and all of that stuff like is really, really interesting.
It's kind of crazy that it's kind of boiled down to a PR thing. They go into space for a specific reason. But if people, they've seen it once, that's fine. I've seen Neil do his jump, and then no one cares after that. So it's kind of interesting testament that some things can go on and on and on, like sports can just keep them going on, and people are really interested in how Man United do week in, week out, but then literally someone touching the moon is like boring after the first time. It's kind of insane.
I do feel like space is kind of making a comeback at the moment like Elon, Bezos going to space. Mm-hmm. Like maybe in 10 years' time, we'll have loads of space movies about those heroes.
Are they heroes is the question?
No, not at all. I was being very sarcastic there.
Very sarcastic.
When Helen said,
it will be Amazon Prime exclusive.
when Helen said at the start about... like being terrifying, the sense of being in the tin can going to space. I just thought, yeah, there's no way on earth I care that much about going into space, because yeah, you die in so many different ways. But Jeff Bezos, yeah, Philly boots. Get as high in there as you want. Elon, mate, go for it.
Shoot to the moon.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't yet talked about the cast, which is, in my notes I've written, is the most 1995 cast ever.
Clint Howard. Well, Clint Howard, Ron's brother, he's got to be in there.
I mean, he's the main one. Kevin Bacon, Bill Paxton, Tom Hanks, Ed Harris.
Is Ed Harris bald, typically? Because he had a good set of hair.
So it's funny you say that. So apparently the real-life person he is playing was bald, but... Or the other way around.
It's when films are inaccurate.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing about his hair. Apparently, like the hair comparison is not correct, but the waistcoat is a real thing. So, like the waistcoat was what that guy wore on that day. Like the waistcoat is a thing.
Also, you had Gary Sinise as well coming back. Was this before or after Forrest Gump?
Oh, it would have been the same. I think Forrest Gump maybe came out in 1994, and this came out in 1995. But they would have been quite close together.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they would have filmed. I don't know anything about the production schedules. Close together, I think, is the...
Well, Sinise and Hanks in the same film. I mean, the cast is obviously stellar. Anytime you've got Tom Hanks in a film, I mean, he's got some recent ones where, like Finch and The Greyhound, where it's kind of take or leave it, but generally Tom Hanks is always a good draw in the film, even if it's one you're not that interested in.
I've got a Tom Hanks quiz question for you.
Ooh,
so he's obviously playing Jim Lovell, which is a real person. He's also played quite a few other real persons. Would you want to have a guess at how many times Tom Hanks has played either exact real people or characters that were based on real people?
Six. Meg, what's your guess?
Well, I know Splash is a true story, so that's at least two. So,
Fran, any advance on two? Or?
Let's go with bang down the middle, four.
He's played nine. He's been in nine films. When
Sully.
He, yep.
That's it.
Captain Phillips.
Oh, of course.
He was Fred Rogers in
Guys, that's Beautiful Day. Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is now on Netflix as we're recording this. One of my favorite films of recent times. Go and watch that.
And then,
good Lord.
He played in characters inspired by In Philadelphia. So the characters, Jeffrey Bowes was the inspiration. And then... Joseph Shea was the inspiration for his character in Catch Me If You Can. He was also Charlie Wilson in Charlie Wilson's War, Walt Disney in Saving Mr. Banks, James B. Donovan in Bridge of Spies, and Ben Bradley in The Post. So I think he's amazing. I really do think he's amazing. And all of those real people, when I've watched him in those films as those people, I felt like he was those people. So I think he's great as the kind of like everyman sort of astronauty face, which was kind of a bit of a thing in the 60s for space people. So yeah, always enjoy watching Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I've heard no bad things about Tom Hanks, and I hope that is how it is generally.
Well, one of his sons is a bit dodgy, so like I think that's deflected any badness
type of person. I think they're into that kind of stuff, aren't they? But yeah, I mean, Tom Hanks is like it's just a stalwart. He's not I never find him super amazing and stuff. Apart, like there's like at the end of Captain Phillips, it's like the best acting I've seen ever in anyone. But generally, he's just like a good, sturdy, like I'm going to be there, likable kind of character. But I don't think anyone's got really a problem with him. Maybe there's people like Meg that don't like Tom Hanks films. There will be someone.
No, I love Tom Hanks. I love that his initials are T. Hanks. Thanks.
Yeah.
So you always knew he's going to be a polite man. Love Castaway. Yeah, I like Tom Hanks. I'm not that controversial.
As is standard in these disaster kind of movies, you have the wife at home trope, which I find a bit tiresome. I don't know. What are your thoughts, guys, on this? We had this quite a bit.
It was the 60s, though, wasn't it? So like,
yeah.
It's
a bit of a thankless, but does it need to be? I mean, obviously, the astronaut's wife was kind of a big deal in NASA. But yeah, I'm kind of tired of that. It was the 90s. It wasn't so prevalent then, I don't think. But it's, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's definitely very noticeable in the film that there are maybe two women and it is a wife and a daughter, or two wives and two daughters. But it is based on something that actually happened in late 1970s. So it's, you've only got a certain amount that you can work with in terms of characters for a script. So it's kind of understandable. I do think that the person who got most like shortchanged in the film is Jim Lovell's son, who he doesn't say anything. You just have shots every now and then of him looking at the telly whilst his dad is up in space nearly dying. And like, that's it. He's not even with the rest of the family, so he can't even react. It's literally just Jim Lovell's son is at school. Yeah. And that's it.
Can I stay home, Mum? Because Dad's in space and he might die. I think school understands. I don't know. School.
I think that more recently, I think First Man is probably slightly different in that Claire Foy
has a bigger role.
A bit more of a role and makes it a bit more of a balanced film in that. But yeah, I mean, of the times of the 60s, really, wives were just kind of
stay at home
and worry about your husband.
Obviously, that is the thing that happens. It's just the balance in it, I think, is balance how they represent it in the film is the problem, not the fact it can and does happen. There's a film called Everest, which came out, I don't know, 8 or so years ago, where Keira Knightley was there waiting for her husband to come home or not. And that was just like, I think she had like 10 minutes of screen time, and that was just like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, that one was really bad. And I remember because legitimately she was in New Zealand and her husband was up Everest. So there was the time difference, but that meant that Keira Knightley's like 10 lines were all in darkness as well.
Yeah.
So you couldn't even see any like face acting or anything. It was just like, yeah, that was a bad one.
Well, let's head to the scores.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
Welcome to Flicks Watcher Scores. They're always out of five. You may have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Fran, with your recommendability.
I'm going to go with five, because I obviously recommended it. And I do think it's one that you would somehow Meg managed to escape watching it, but I do think that you'll either have watched it or you should watch it at some point, because it is such a well-known film, but also it's such a well-known story as well, and such a kind of interesting way of introducing someone to the story.
I'm quite amazed and also surprised and happy and also sad that you didn't know the story before you watched it, but also sad that you didn't, because your predilection to not liking space films maybe took you away from the story a bit, because obviously there's Gravity, which is completely false, and Moon, but then there is this, which is a real story, and I wish I'd watched it without not knowing. So what's your recommendability?
For a film about space, I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you like films about space, you're going to love this. That should be the tagline.
Helen.
Yeah, I mean, not liking films about space, I'm going to have to factor that into the recommendability. It's a really kind of solid, like, docudrama in that it is just kind of telling a story, which in reality, something went wrong. But the thing that went wrong was kind of like minor in comparison to some, you know, like in terms of like Armageddon levels of things going wrong, it's quite small. and then the things
three,
to kind of
three people in space, which
yeah, is, and then the kind of things that they do to fix it are not even like the Martian level of trying to fix it. So it's kind of not that much happens other than they try to go to the moon. There's a little bit of an explosion, but like it isn't like the ship's on fire and there's like smoke everywhere and people are running around and screaming. And then they do some maths. And then they have to burn through the atmosphere in a small bit, and then that's kind of it. So it's
but the obviously the potential of things going wrong is if they don't get the angle wrong, then it will be on fire and there will be burning up. But do you think it got that drama right for you? Or
yeah, I think it did. But okay. I wonder for someone coming to it new, like yeah. watching it for the first time now, having had like what is it, 25 years of like. Action in space, whether they will find it a little bit underwhelming, and perhaps having they might already know the outcome of it, and it might be a slightly different experience. So with that 4.5,
I do wonder, because if people like Bezos and Musk and Branson are going to space, are people already jaded with it and not understand the importance of the angle? Because I remember when I was at school learning, don't know why they were teaching us this, but like learning how important it is to have the right angle, otherwise you'll just burn up. So for me, it's like a real fear of like, holy shit, they need to get the right angle or it's going to burn up. But kids today, well, they just think, well, just come down, mate. So what was your 4.5?
I think it's a really, really solid like film, and it's if you like space, really great. But I don't know whether if you were to watch it for the first time now and you're relatively like filled up with other space dramas, whether you'd find it a little bit underwhelming, possibly.
You should watch this film. It's nowhere near my favourite film. There's no reason why you shouldn't watch it. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5. Yeah, watch it. It's great. repeat viewing score, Fran.
Oh, I really should have thought about this more. Sorry.
Ruminate now.
I had something in my head earlier and I didn't write it down, and that was foolish of me. But repeat viewing score, I'm going to go with, again, I've watched it many, many times. I would say 4.5, purely because I think, as Helen was saying, because it is older now, there are some aspects to it which we may be a little bit more jaded with if you're going to keep watching it now. As an adult, but I did watch it twice in preparation for this.
Oh, wow.
So
committed.
Meg, what's your repeat viewing score?
Repeatability, I'm going to give it like a 2 because I feel like I've seen it now.
Space film.
I'm glad I've seen it because you asked me to watch it. I wouldn't have watched it otherwise. I probably.
Kind of horizons.
Yes, exactly. I'm not going to watch it again.
Helen?
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one because this time round I was a bit less interested in it because I knew how it felt more like a documentary for me this time round in the way that I was watching it. I've seen it a couple of times. I enjoyed going back to it. I was looking forward to seeing it and see how it held up, because like visually it still looks like really, really good. So it hasn't aged in some way that some kind of like 90s films have. But yeah, I'm not sure whether you need to watch it loads. So 2.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 2. No, in fact, no, I'm going to go for 2. I think this might be the second time I watched it, and I will watch it again at some point, but who knows when. 2. Small screen score. This might be a bit what you're talking about, Helen, but let's go to Fran first for the small screen score.
I'm going to have to go right down the middle with 2.5 because I've never seen it on a big screen. But I would assume that there's a lot of stuff that would just be amazing on the big screen, or that was made for viewing in the cinema. So, yeah, obviously space would be bigger on a big screen and that would be amazing.
Meg?
Yeah, I'm just going to agree with Fran here, 2.5, because I probably would like to watch it again on the big screen. But other than that, I'm not that fussed about seeing it again.
Helen?
Have you ever seen this? I can't remember if I've seen it at the cinema. I don't think I have. I think I would remember maybe, but it was a long, long time ago. I've only ever seen it on the small screen and kind of enjoyed it on the small screen. So 4.5.
Given that I'm not going to watch it often, I think the next time, like Meg, if I saw it again, I'd like to see it on the big screen. Because it really does hold up. And I remember maybe it was just a saturation point with understanding, you know, about the film and how it was made. Because they used that vomit comet, didn't they, to actually film the zero gravity scene. So everything, there's no CGI, there's no kind of in-camera effects. They actually are like weightless at the time and things are floating around. And I think that really holds up. So I would like to see it on the bigger screen. So I'm going to give a lower score of 3. Engagement score, Fran?
I am going to go with 4. For this one, because as I say, I did watch it twice in preparation for this, and that was because I the first time foolishly thought that I could do a little bit of work whilst I was watching it, because I was like, I've seen it so many times, I just need to refresh myself. So I started off kind of like doing a little bit of work and then getting hooked into it, but I did still like manage to finish some work whilst watching it, so it didn't entirely pull me away from my laptop. So yeah,
Meg.
I'm gonna give it like a 2. I was engaged with the characters, and to me there was one bit that really did engage with me. It was the bit where the astronauts come to the house and sit with the mother. I can't remember their names. The famous astronauts. What are they called?
Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. They come and sit with the mum, and I found that bit really engaging, more so than any other part of the film. So, yeah, I'll give it a 2 for engaging.
Helen?
So I definitely think, like, the first time I ever watched it would, like, be up there as a 5, and then this time was probably quite a bit lower because I was doing a bit of like NASA research. So
just trying out some of the maths.
Sucked into how many people died on NASA. That kind of like, so I'm going to give it an average of 4.
I think because I always knew the outcome. This is just a big kind of bugbear, and I knew they're going to survive. So I was like, oh, come on then. Try and surprise me. It's for Hanks, isn't it? It's for Hanks, Paxton, Bacon, and Sinise that get you engaged, and they do a good job. Ed Harris and Ron Howard's younger brother, Clint, as well. It's because the acting in that's what engages you. But yeah, 3.5. Sorry, what was your score, Helen?
I went for 4.
3.5, 4. That gives us an overall score of 3.46875. Oh,
yeah, pretty good.
It's pretty good. Recommendability score was high in its own right at 4.625, just as an isolated score. So, guys, if you are listening to this, do follow us. We are on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. One of the main reasons to follow us is because we put a tweet out before we go into the recording, such as this one. We're recording Apollo 13 with Meg, Roz, Foz, and Frantic T from On The Outside Pod. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and the score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on FlixWatcher. We had one response here, and it was very positive. Fran?
This is from Danny Dimes Kotnik at Decal The Way. And they say, 5 out of 5 stars, perfect movie from casting, writing, special effects, directing, arguably Hanks's best performance.
Fair enough. Meg and Fran, can you sign off by telling everyone where to find you online? And we'll say sayonara to the listeners.
Yep. So for myself, if you are on Twitter, you can follow me personally at FranticT. And you can listen to my podcast On The Outside, wherever you're listening to this, just have a search for it, or head over to onthe outside podcast.co.uk.
And if you also don't like films about space, you can find me. I am at Meg Rosfeld, MEGROZFOZZ, Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok, because I'm turning 30 and trying to pretend I'm not.
Well, cheers, guys. It's been a pleasure to talk about Houston. We have a problem.
Thank you. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram.
Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.